This is Ant-Man, and it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show, and I'm back on the air. It's my first time back since before Christmas, so I've got a couple of guests in Matt Frost and Mark Lowry, both from ARB, so our show sponsor. So we'll kick into the show sponsorship, into Steppen Wolf, Born to be Wild, and then we'll be right back and talking to you.
ARB 4x4 Accessories is a proud sponsor of Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show and a station sponsor. Whether it be frontal protection, a drawer system to increase storage, or a recovery kit to ensure you don't get stuck in the bush without a way out, head to ARB today to ensure you're ready for whatever our harsh Aussie terrain will throw your way. Visit arb.com.au to explore the products that are right for you, or find your closest ARB store or stockist.
And I bet you haven't heard that song for a while. This is Ant-Man, and it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here on Yarra Valley FM with our new tag, The Voice of the Yarra Valley. My guests today have come all the way from Kilsyth. Yeah, a long way away. So we got Matt Frost. How are you, Matt?
It's good to see you, Ant-Man. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And also Mark Lowry. How are you?
Very good. Thanks, mate.
Good. Thanks for coming in. Now, all three of us go back a fair way, and we've had Matt on the show before, but he managed to convince Mark he's got to come in as well. And so both these guys are very experienced travellers. They love Australia. They've been around a bit, and we'll be talking about some of their travels and bits and pieces. And we're going to talk about the Murray Darling. We're going to talk about drought. We're going to talk about a whole lot of different issues that are happening out there at the moment. So, but let's start with you, Matt. How was your Christmas and New Year?
I've got nothing for you, Ant-Man. It was very uneventful. Some of us have to work between Christmas and New Year, and so I just grabbed a couple of days off. But I did manage a week off at the start of December, actually up on the Murray itself. I just went away with my son for a few days with the swags, and just did a bit of fishing and four-wheel driving up there. So that was really good. Managed to get up there before the hot spell they've been getting up there now.
Yeah, well, I can't believe some of these temperatures that we're getting. Like, seriously, you know, when I've been out in Birdsville and stuff where it's been getting close to 50, and I can tell you that's hot. But getting it, you know, in mid-40s up in the, you know, just in the north of the state is just out of control.
It is.
Yeah, so no, it's good. What about you, Mark? Did you get away?
Oh, I had 3 weeks off and spent most of it around the house.
Yeah.
So just preparing for the weather. Excuse me. Bit of time with the kids, a bit of motorbike riding, and just getting out and about, not too far from home.
Not too far, yeah. Well, I guess, you know, you're like a lot of people, you don't like to go travelling during the hot summer.
No.
You know, part of it, especially Christmas. I mean, I know Christmas is good for family, it's good for everything else, but when you live on property in a fire zone, you've just got to do it, you know. You've got to be around, you've got to be clearing, you've got to do anything else. So, no, it's good. Now, I do have a question for you, and it's straight off the cuff, and we haven't actually talked about this much. Have you had any snakes around your area?
Yeah, we've got, we had a black snake on Sunday, I think it was, that we chased away from a dog run next door. And we've got a tiger snake at the moment sitting in the well next door.
Right.
So there's an old man-made well that's been there since the 60s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the tiger snake in there is a brown one, so we don't see brown tiger snakes very often. They're normally green and black, or green and yellow.
Yep.
He's been in there for 2 weeks. I can't get him out. So every time I try to lift him out, he just swims down another 10 feet and comes back up again. So he's quite happy just sitting there, but he can't get out.
Right, okay. So, yeah, that's going to be a bit of a tricky one to deal with, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I've been asked a lot of times over the last few weeks, you know, because I'm telling people at my place, you know, shut the doors.
Yep.
You know, just I don't want snakes coming into my house or into the studio and all that sort of stuff, and just shut the door and it's not a problem. And they're going, oh, you know, but your place and snakes, don't you say? I haven't seen one this season.
Yeah, no, there's plenty up where we are.
Yeah, I think I'm sure they're around, but, you know, we've done a lot of clearing on our place around the buildings and stuff like that, so it's not really hospitable anymore. It used to be all bush down the back, and, yeah, and we've been trying to deal with, you know, frogs and chooks and ducks and all the rest of it, and rats, and you know, so normally we'd get one by now, but touch wood.
Yeah, we've got three little ponds around the house that are full of bullfrogs, so that sort of brings them in, and just the sound of the water. So normally when we see them, it's somewhere around the pond.
Yeah, and that's always where they're going to be. So that's a thing, and it's just interesting because I'm surprised normally we'd see my first snake around late October, and we've had that sort of weather, and I normally put out my little snake rattlers once I do. And
do you think they work?
I know they work.
Yeah. Well, that's why you haven't seen them then.
Well, they're not out.
Sorry. What is a snake rattler?
Oh, it's a device that you put batteries in and you screw it together and you put it in the ground. It creates a vibration that snakes don't like.
Okay.
And I normally have about five around the buildings, but I always wait until I see the first one before I put them out.
Okay.
And the only one that's running at the moment is one that's sitting on the porch that I pulled out 3 months ago, and it's still rattling its head off. But I figure it gives everyone pause when they hear the rattle. What's that? What's that?
Yeah.
But, they work around our place because we very rarely get snakes where the rattles are within a certain area. I don't think it covers the area they tell you it's going to cover.
Yep.
And it's not like the solar-powered ones that, you know, sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. Well, you got batteries in them, they work. But that's just my experience. So, so they're not too bad. All right, so up to the Murray. So let's talk, I guess we'll talk about that. A couple of things. I'm going to have my ant rant, which I normally do every now and again. And you guys are going to back me up on this, I'm sure. But, you know, folks, why the hell in the middle of summer do you need a campfire? And what's worse, why the hell, when you have a campfire, you walk away and you leave it hot? You don't put out the burners. You're not taking enough water. Are you not using something, you're not digging ground over it? one of the fires that was started the other day was because somebody walked away from their campfire, and why you'd need a campfire at 40 plus degrees. So I just get really sick of people doing dumb things and having a fire in summer in dry conditions, regardless of whether it's, 25 at night or 35. You know, why do you need a fire that you leave out of control?
The implications of that as well are very widespread. I mean, obviously, in a worst-case scenario, you'll end up causing a bushfire. But even if you don't, the problem is that when people see this and there's unattended fires, then these are the sorts of reasons why property gets shut off over summer, and why we, you know, one of the battles that four-wheel drivers have had for many, many years is access. And I know in Victoria the four-wheel drive clubs in particular have been very, very active at being proactive and portraying four-wheel drivers in the responsible light that most of us are. But when you go and get people that camp and leave fires going and litter and all that sort of irresponsible behaviour, it just stuffs it for the rest of us because effectively it makes it harder for us to get access into these locations.
Yeah, and I think one of the worst bits is really a lot of the people that do it aren't the club people. The club people know what they're doing. They're told, they're taught. You and I know, you know, even though we probably haven't belonged to clubs for a while, we've travelled enough, we know what we should and shouldn't be doing. That there's a lot of people out there. The last one that I came across, we were up at Dargo, and we were sitting... No, it wasn't Dargo. It was in a river with a little town. Used to have a petrol pump there. Come on.
Woods Point.
Woods Point, thank you. We're sitting in the river there, and the police turned up and said, hey, it's going to be a total fire ban day tomorrow. Don't have a fire tonight. Perfect. And when we're driving out, there's a fire going and no one to be in there. And so I pulled up, went out there, called out a few names, and these people had burnt their chairs. There was all this stuff going on, and they were from another country.
Yep.
And no idea. So, you know, folks, that's my rant. You know, if you see somebody with a fire going that shouldn't be going, go and tell them. Make sure it's out. Even if you just go and investigate a smoke out of a fireplace, if you need to, put it out yourself.
So. And it's not just starting another fire. It's the injuries that can happen from it as well. I've seen reports of kids that have walked across a fire that's been put out and covered with dirt, but it hasn't had any water on it and burnt their feet in summer.
Yeah, that's not a good thing either.
No, and beaches and that where people have fires from time to time, that's quite common.
There you go. It's not something I'd normally do. I'd normally put water on it. When you're by a river too, or by a beach, it's not hard
to
go and get
it. There's no
excuse. Yeah, there is no excuse. So, anyway, that's my little rant for the moment. But it's one of those painful things that we are in dry weather and drought and all the rest of it. But what we might do is we might go to a couple of things that we need to do in regard to sponsors. I'm going to play a bit of Little Desert from Emily South, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Murray Darling and drought and, you know, unfortunately people that are losing their homes because they're not getting any feed and blah blah blah. So we'll do that. So I'll just drop this one up into, let's say, there. And I'll pull that one out of there. This is all good. This is new for me, folks. So, yes, there's been a few little muck around things, but that's what happens. All right, here we go. Some station stuff we've got to look after and a bit of Emily South Little Desert.
Station sponsor Healesville Garden Supplies is now taking orders for Valentine's Day. Come in store to see Carolyn, our fully qualified florist, for your Valentine's Day orders of flower arrangements, chocolates, teddies and even a beautifully wrapped plant from our flourishing nursery. Healesville Garden Supplies is located at 82 Maroondah Highway, Healesville. Give us a call on 5962 5054, or find us on the web at healesvillegardensupplies.com.au.
Aurum Aged Care at Healesville is a modern, comfortable care home providing 24-hour nursing care for aged care residents. Aurum Healesville offers a wide range of lifestyle activities to suit everyone, and their seasonal food menus are cooked fresh on-site every day. Aurum Healesville also provides specialised dementia care in a dedicated memory support community within the care home. You're welcome to enjoy a coffee with the team whilst experiencing firsthand everything that Aurum Aged Care at Healesville has to offer. Call 1-800-287-786 to book a tour. Also on the web at aurum.com.au. Station sponsor.
Celebrate Australia Day long weekend at Healesville Greyhounds. It's all happening on Monday, 28th of January, with live music, entertainment, local food trucks and loads of games and fun for the kids. Plus, there's all the excitement of great Greyhound action. Enjoy one last day out before the end of school holidays. It's going to be a fun family day out and entry is free. Gates open from 10 a.m. 263 Don Road, Healesville, Monday the 28th of January. For more information, go to healesville.grv.org.au. Healesville Greyhounds, station sponsor.
That's a bit of Emily South, Little Desert, and what a cool bluesy sort of track that is. Love it. Okay, it is 27 minutes past two. This is Ant-Man and Ant-Man's RVM 4x4 show. We've got Matt Frost and Mark Lowry in the studio. So, guys, you're both very aware of some of the drought conditions. You were talking about that a bit earlier, Matt, about the Murray-Darling. And so maybe, Mark, you might want to talk about what your trip was like, because you went there last year.
Yeah, that was the middle of the year. We sort of travelled from Mildura all the way up to Bourke over about a 10-day period, stayed on some station properties and a few caravan parks along the way. And It was desolate. There was no grass anywhere to be seen. Yeah. Travelling along the roads in the middle of the day, there was just thousands of kangaroos, emus, or your goats as well. And you get out to some of these station properties, like Tolano, which we stayed there for a couple of days. Place. And today they're saying, you know, the money they make off the sheep and the wool is nothing in comparison to the money they make off the goats that are just, you know, running rampant out there. But even that's, you know, falling away with all the kangaroos and the emus coming in and eating all the feed.
Well, one of the things that that I was listening to a report the other day on, I think it was ABC, it might have been Landline or something like that, and they were talking about the masses now of animals, native animals, that are dying because there is no feed and there is no water in lots of places. And so we're talking about kangaroos and emus and, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know, and I imagine that would be affecting goats and stuff as well. Because
Mark mentioned Tolano Station before. So Tolano sits on the Darling River between Pooncarie and Menindee. And I went up through that area, I reckon it was probably 2 years ago at Easter, on the way up to Broken Hill, and the Menindee Lakes were full back then. They were actually spectacular. I remember going there with the kids and there was so much bird life and fish. They're empty now, and that's nothing to do with the drought. That was a mismanagement decision that was made in the last 2 years to empty the lakes to send water down south. But what's now happened is because of the effectively you're sending too much water down river and extracting too much up the top of the Darling, you've basically left with this huge area running sort of between Menindee Lakes and down to Pooncarie that there's no current flow in the river, and as a consequence of that, they've been having catastrophic fish kills. I mean, we're talking over a million fish that they reckon have died in the last few days, and these aren't, you know, these are fish up to 100 years old that have survived drought after drought after drought over the years, and these are the brooding stock of Murray cod, and the consequences. I actually caught up with a guy this morning who's a fishing journalist and knows the area very well, and the consequences of what's happening at the moment will take, if ever they do recover, will take decades. It won't be in our lifetime, because effectively you've just lost all of the brooding stock in that area for native fish, it is an absolutely catastrophic, it's probably the worst environmental disaster I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, look, I tend to agree, and You just got to wonder, you know, the push for farming, for cotton farming, and for breeding stock, and for growing things down through that whole Murray Darling Basin. Everyone's taken their share of water, and there's not enough to go around everywhere. I mean, we should be piping water from somewhere, you know, maybe from our stupid plant that we have down here that we've only used once or twice, and we didn't even need it after all of that. But maybe we should be looking to somehow pump water up north and get it into the system. But the disaster, the economic disaster because of it, mismanagement, the natural disaster, you know, the fish thing. What if you'd have to be on another planet not to have seen some of the most shocking images of all the dead fish, and, you know, and silly things like I figure, because Jane and I were talking about this the other day, they should be pulling all those dead fish out, putting them into a thing and turning them into fertilizer and stuff like that, rather than just burying a big hole and dumping them.
Yeah.
But they probably won't, because no one will think, oh, hang on, maybe we should use that resource, put that money back into the river, you know, and the river system to try and, you know, do what the government, oh, we'll restock it a little bit. Yeah, well.
I was talking to a friend of mine, a property owner up that way, and I was talking to her yesterday, and she was saying even in the township of Menindee, the stench of death and decay, which is all the rotting fish and wildlife in that area, you can smell it in the air. It's quite, it's putrid. So it's one of these things that there was a fair bit of media coverage on this issue about 12 months ago on TV, in terms of the mismanagement of the waterways through there, and a lot of people back then were predicting this event would happen, and it's happened through I suppose lack of action, and like I say, it's one of these things that we'll ever see recover in our lifetime. I mean, even if we get great rains in the near term, which is what obviously the government is saying is the only thing that will fix it, and we get current flows again. Well, you're not going to get those 100-year-old fish back overnight, which are the breeding stock. So, and then you think about the effect that has on the whole system, what the effect it has on tourism. And I mean that whole run up there is quite a bit of an iconic four-wheel drive trip. It's called the Darling River Run.
Beautiful.
You can Google the Darling River Run, and there's lots of stuff on the internet about all the different places you can stop, and it's a brilliant place to go and do a fairly laid back, tame four-wheel drive trip. So nothing too technical, but just some nice outback and do some beautiful camping. And you know that place is never going to be the same again. So it's an absolute disaster. And the effect it's going to have on the communities on that river and on people. I mean, I plan to do a trip there next year, a two-week trip up the Darling River, maybe even take a boat along and stuff like that. I'm going to have to rethink that now. And it's a real tragic circumstances.
The majority of the people spending money up there are probably the fishermen as well, because the caravanners tend to be self-sufficient to a certain extent. Mm. You go to the small towns like Menindee and there's a pub and there's a cafe. But, you know, if you're not getting the traffic through, you know, those little businesses are going to shut up as well.
Yeah. The flow-on effect is massive. Mm. I mean, we were there probably about 7 years ago. We took a caravan along a run up through the Darling, and we ended up at the other side of Broken Hill with his caravan. But we were there, and it was in flood, and it was brilliant. But I can remember a time back when, under the tutelage of Ron Moon and his mag at the time, and they did the, you might remember this, Matt, and Mark, the jet ski run that they did up the Darling. So they were
actually, I do remember that now. Yeah,
and there were certain points back then that they had to stop and get the jet skis out because there wasn't enough water there to actually go through. So we're not talking about something that's just a disaster from 1 or 2 years ago. This mismanagement seems to be going on for decades, and a lot of it's to do with this big fight for water from top to bottom on the Murray Darling. So as a system, so yeah, it's very sad, and it's not good because all these small towns really do need us to be travelling through them, and who's going to go there if there's nothing to see?
Well, there's still plenty to see, but some are like fishing. Well, obviously, that's gone.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if every fish in the river's dead, which it certainly looks that way at the moment, there's going to be nothing for the fishermen to travel up.
Yeah, I'm tipping the carp are going to probably still be there.
Yeah, I'm sure there probably is.
I mean, it's pretty one of the reasons this is a little bit close to my heart is because I was actually in Broken Hill last Easter, up there for an event that we sponsor, and just by complete coincidence, we were all sitting having breakfast in a cafe one morning in Broken Hill, and we noticed there was a lot of police activity outside, and next minute, a couple of cars rocked up, and Malcolm Turnbull stepped out. He was PM at the time, and the leader of the Nationals stepped out, and there was a group of lobbyists there that were there pleading with them to do something about the Darling River. I mean, they were, you know, 12 months ago they were anticipating this was going to happen, and that action needed to be taken, and clearly that nothing's happened, and that's why we're experiencing this now. So I went up to the PM myself and introduced myself, and I had my kids with me and said, please, please, please do something to save this river. You know, clearly nothing's been done.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and you know, but the politicians are all quick to blame everybody else. You know, it's this, it's that, but there's a certain amount of, you know, greed that's happened from certain particular farming areas within that, and you know, some not so much the fishing anymore. But yeah, I've got a friend of mine that lives up in Deniliquin, or an associate that lives up there, and he relies on water for his farm. To get it on there, and his license is no good. He can't get water out, no stock, so they're in trouble. And so there are a lot of people out there that are, you know, doing it really, really tough.
And he still have to pay for his allocation each year, regardless of whether he can get it or not.
Yeah, I haven't actually talked to him about that, but I would imagine that would be the case because, you know, yes, you pay for your allocation, but, you know, the government's talking about buying back water allocations to try and save the river. Well, you know, it's pretty hard to buy back something if somebody's invested $100,000s or hundreds of thousands of dollars into a property and stock, and suddenly you've been asked to cut your water allocation by a third or half or whatever the case may be, or totally, because where else are you going to get your water from? So, I think there's going to be some really long-ranging effects you know, in regard to, it's our major food bowl, it's a lot of production going on. If half of these people go into debt and then can't pay that debt, there's going to be a lot of land for sale, all that sort of stuff. So it's more than just a little bit of mismanagement, really, when you think about it. It affects massive, massive part of our population. And, you know, I know a few of them, and they don't want to be going to the bank again to say, well, you know, I can't pay you again this month, because then, you know, the banks are saying, well, you know, what do we do here and all the rest of it, and, you know.
It's noted that the federal opposition have been calling for an independent inquiry into this, because, as you said, Anthony, everyone's blaming each other. That the reasons why this happened need to be transparent. Unfortunately, yes. The government have already said we don't need an independent inquiry, I think most people that are looking at this from an independent point of view believe that, and the only way you're going to get to the bottom of this is to run an independent inquiry, find out what's wrong, why it went wrong, learn from it, and make sure it never happens again.
Well, and that's the thing. Ensure it doesn't happen again. I mean, you only got to look at how many times the government said no banking inquiry, no banking inquiry, no banking inquiry. They do the banking inquiry as a royal commission, and then all of a sudden all this stuff's coming out and all the banks are in trouble, and you can, you know, a lot of the everyday people knew that that was happening, and they've been on the receiving end of it. No one in the government wanted to do it because it was going to upset the apple cart too much. And then they've now gone into super and they've gone into other things. But all this stuff, you know, once it comes out, everyone's going, ah, shock, horror. But most people knew it was happening anyway. The reason they don't want a royal commission, I reckon, is because they just don't want to look worse than they already are, because our politicians are a biggest bunch of not very good people at the moment. And I'm struggling to even think of somebody that's actually doing a good job to help community, and that's what we're all about, is community, you know, in my view, in my world. So sounds like a bit of a rant there, guys.
Second rant.
Actually, on a positive, there are people doing a great job, not up on the Darling, but if you look close at home in Victoria, what's being done locally to help our rivers and native fish stocks. I mean, there's a one of the things that our state government's committed to is a massive native fish hatchery that they're going to build up near Shepparton, which will have fantastic implications for all of the rivers and the lakes, and you know, that we like to camp along in Victoria as they increase native fish stocks. And unfortunately, none of that will help the Darling, because breeding native fish is a very complex thing, and those 100-year-old cod that I referred to before on the Darling River, I mean, they're genetically suited to that stretch of river, they're used to living through droughts. They're not used to living through water mismanagement, but they can live through droughts. And but unfortunately, I mean, the native fish that are going to be bred in Victoria over the you know, the decades to come, you can't just go and throw those fish in the Darling and expect that they're going to survive and be drought-proof fish like the old cod that died up there. So, but no, certainly in Victoria, there's a lot of great things happening in our waterways, and it's unfortunate that elsewhere in the country that they're not watching what's being done locally.
Yeah, and that's the thing. All right, so it's 2:41 here at Yarra Valley FM, the voice of the Yarra Valley. You're listening to Ant-Man, and we've got Mark and Matt in the studio that you're listening to, and we're, as you can probably tell, all very passionate about what's happening in our state and in our country. So we're going to go and we've got a few CSAs, Community Service Announcements and Station Sponsors, and then we're going to go to Joshua Catterson with Painted Desert Serenade. So we shall be back very soon.
40 Wings Churnside Park is having a stock take sale. Save up to 50% store-wide on leading brand mattresses, including King Coil Chiropractic, Crown Posture, and the exciting new range of silent partner Backcare sleep systems, as well as bedroom furniture. Don't miss the savings, but only for a limited time. So come and see us at 40 Wings in the Homemaker Centre at 282 Maroondah Highway, Churnside Park. 40 Wings, serious about sleep. Station sponsor.
You, yes, you. Here at Yarra Valley FM, we like hearing feedback from you, the listener. If you have heard something that you've really liked on our shows, please feel free to email us at info@yarravalleyfm.com. Our presenters are waiting not only to hear feedback from you, but to also improve our shows for the future and beyond.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1 is conducting free radio presenter courses for anyone interested in becoming a radio presenter or panel operator. However, if presenting is not for you, we're also looking for volunteers to get involved behind the scenes in the areas of office assistance, recording of community service announcements, fundraising and sponsorship, as well as setup and attendance at our outside broadcasts. If you are interested in becoming a part of the Yarra Valley FM 99.1 team, please email info@yarravalleyfm.com for more information.
Had a crash? Broken down? Keep calm and call Yarra Valley Towing on free call 1300 TOW 24/7. Yarra Valley Towing is the largest towing service in the Yarra Valley and an approved accident towing operator for all leading insurance companies. We also provide roadside assistance towing. Our call centre is there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So remember, when you need a tow truck, keep calm and call Yarra Valley Towing 1300 TOW 24/7. That's 1300 TOW 24/7. Keep calm and call Yarra Valley Towing, station sponsor.
He tells her, I want to paint you naked on a big brass bed with bright orange poppies all around your head. And she says, crazy old man, I'm not young anymore. Well, that's all right, he whispers, I've never painted before. And do you love me, Lady Jane, Lady Jane? Do you love me, Lady Jane, Lady Jane? You got me talking to the moon, you got me walking in the rain. Love me, do you love me, Lady Jane? Oh, I wanna read your tea leaves by candlelight on a fat red velvet sofa. I wanna be with you all night. I wanna tickle your feet with a peacock plume. And she says, can you talk a little softer? There are people in the room. Do you love me, Lady Jane, Lady Jane? Do you love me, Lady Jane, Lady Jane? You got me talking to the moon. You got me walking in the rain. Do you love me, do you love me, Lady Jane? And Jane. Paint you naked on a big brass bed with bright orange poppies all around your head. And she says, crazy old man, I'm not young anymore. But that's alright, he whispers, I've never painted before. And do you love me, Lady Jane, Lady Jane? Do you love me, Lady Jane? Candlelight on a fat red velvet sofa. I wanna be with you all night. I wanna tickle your feet with a peacock plume. And she says, can you talk a little softer? There are people in the room. Do you love me, Lady Jane, Lady Jane? Do you love me, Lady Jane? Talking to the moon, you got me walking in the rain. Do you love me? Do you love me, Lady Jane? And Jane says, my children brought me here and promised me they'd call. Well, you know, kids forget, that's just the way of it all. And he says, well, that makes us both footloose and fancy free. So Jane, do you wanna come see the painting?
for anyone that's been to the Painted Desert, you'll know that that song just comes in beautifully. It is 2:48. It's Ant-Man and Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. We've been having some fairly spirited discussions here with Matt Frost and Mark Lowry, who are from ARB and station sponsors. But I guess following on from that drought, guys, one of the things I found out, I had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and a mutual friend that we know was in a bit of trouble, and they live on a pretty remote property, a cattle property, and you know, a lot of drought out there is going, getting left behind. We're not seeming to get hay out there, we're not seeming to get support out there in these really remote areas of cattle country, and I was up there a couple of years ago and there was a reasonable amount of water on the ground, but they just come out of a drought and the feed was there, but it doesn't last very long. I was also shocked to find out that, you know, a lot of people have raised money and they don't actually know where that money's going, and I was a bit put out by that. I've contributed. I know that you guys have contributed very heavily towards supporting our country people, because obviously, you know, you're out there all the time and you're doing it. But just interested in your thoughts about, you know, as you said in the break, Mark, you know, you love your Royal Commissions, Ant. I just think, you know, sometimes we need to look at a bigger picture. We need to maybe look at whether it is totally mismanagement, like the Darling, and mismanagement by the farmers, or whether we need to look at why there's problems in this area. So just, you know, interested in your thoughts, if you've got any on that matter, and what you think.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really I guess it's not really a field I've got a huge amount of experience in. I mean, but I draw on my experience of meeting people in very remote parts of the outback. I mean, one of my favourite stations that I've spent many great nights at over the years is LD Station, which mm-hmm. is about an hour north of Broken Hill. Now that they've yep. had challenges for, I've been travelling up that way since 1999, and I've been up there. And it's been, you know, it's been lush and green, and there's been water running in the creeks, and you know, right now it's bone dry, and I think they've done very well. They've adapted to that, and they farm sheep, they harvest goats, and they do a damn good job of tourism. LD's a shining example of a station that welcomes four drivers. They offer camping. They've got basic accommodation on site as well, and it's for them, it's been a great way of supplementing their income, gaining some exposure. You know, it's a beautiful part of the world, and I said this a few times over the years. I reckon that some of the best four driving opportunities outside of the high country is on private property. I mean, if you go up through the Flinders Ranges, which is one of my favourite parts of Australia, there are some brilliant day trips you can do on private stations that are like self-guided tours around the property, and I think that's a great example of farmers, you know, adapting and making their increasing the versatility of their properties, and it's a win-win for everyone. They get an income from the tourism, and we as four drivers get to visit some absolutely stunning destinations and get away from
absolutely,
everyone.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, well, I think that remoteness, if, you know, they have to be smarter at some point, don't they? You know, when it's all said and done, if you can't manage stock, or you can't manage water, or you can't manage your farm properly, but you can manage the tourism side of it, well, at least that's one sort of string to the bow. And then if you can get the other bits right, well, you're gonna, you know, you might not be well off in the hard times, but that's what happens. You know, that's how farmers, they're tough as old boots, and they go through in and out of different scenarios all the time, the hardness that most city folk would never really understand. And, you know, we have to be a sort of a bit either way, you know, we've got to be flexible in how our thinking and our processes and what happens and all the rest of it. But some people you guys know, Mark and Denny French, they came back from a big tour over WA and up north and all the rest of it, and they were talking about how many farm stays now are opening their properties up. You pay less a fee than some of the caravan parks and stuff like that, and they're welcoming the tourist dollar in, and they're giving them sometimes even better facilities or better views, seeing some of their photography, because Denny likes pulling the camera out, that she's taken. It's like, well, that's better than being on that beach down there, which is the most famous beach.
It's a far better camping experience than being just stacked into a caravan park at the same time too.
I mean, when we were up north last year in the Gulf, it might be the year before now, we were up at Normanton, and then went out onto the coast, and the caravan park up there, seriously, they were sardines.
Yep.
And they were booked for weeks and weeks and weeks. And we were lucky because they just put in another section and we were the only one in that section as a non-powered section. But Mark and Denny and some other people we were travelling with were intermingled in the park because they wanted power. And, oh, my gosh, they're all lovely people. But, geez, you could hear the babies crying. You could hear the people arguing and all that sort of stuff. And, it's... wasn't a great experience.
Well, the year before last, we went up to the Gold Coast, took the family up to do the parks and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We took the camp trailer, thought we'll just camp in a Gold Coast caravan park. And so we booked ahead and got in there, and there would have been 200 of these monstrosity motorhomes and caravans and everything in there. And there was only two camper trailers with families. One was us and one was the other family. And we're at opposite ends of the park. Mm. And at 7 o'clock every night, all the curtains were opening up to check out what was the noise of the kids having a bit of fun. So, it's too hard to do these days. So getting out on some of these station properties, they can run amok, have fun, have a campfire, play in the rivers, do whatever. Farm stay is great. They can get to learn a few things while they're at it.
Well, I think that's the other advantage. You can get out and you can get involved too, because a lot of them are happy to have volunteers help them, and they'll normally offer a few days free accommodation and the odd meal and stuff, just to say, oh, look, if you've got a skill we haven't got, can you help us do this? And that is a great idea, because again, it's integrating people with different skills that might never have been on a farm before, but they know how to put a solar panel kit together, or they know how to do electrical stuff or plumbing or whatever, and then they just muck into it and off you go. So it's a good way to go, I think. So comes back to this, when you're traveling, so much is changing. And I'm sure you guys would be aware of a lot of the new rules coming in about free camping now. A lot of free camps are actually closing down. Councils are closing them down because the caravan parks, become monsters.
Yep.
And are saying, well, we want people to come to our caravan park, and if you've got free camping and there's more people at that free camping than here, go from there. But it becomes back to this greed thing of, charging up to 75, 80, 90 bucks a night to stay. And I just find that ludicrous, and a lot of people can't do it, And so travelling in off-peak seasons, all that sort of stuff, there's a lot of people with their caravan or their car and their touring, they just can't afford that sort of stuff every night. And
well, not with the price of fuel and the price of meals and everything these days.
Yeah, nothing's getting cheaper.
No.
I'd like to think it was, but it's not. But, so it is interesting when it comes to that. So free camping, nowadays you have to have grey water tanks. Most car or vans, some of them have got black water tanks now, but grey water is a must. You can't camp if you don't have grey water. There's a great new thing that I saw the other week with a water tank system that gets rid of grey water and fresh water through bladder system. Really quite interesting. Nothing been like it on the market, but basically as you drink your fresh water, it goes back into a separate part of the tank. And so you just use it, and then you can go and dump it when you're finished and top up with fresh water again, and off you go.
And hope the bladder doesn't leak.
Yeah, well, it's a very special bladder in this case. But, yeah, you're right. That would be the only concern. But it's that sort of innovative thinking, I think, that's going to change a lot of the way we see our camping and what we do, because you can't just dump stuff on the ground anymore. And so that becomes a real issue, I think. And people, as you said before, Matt, leaving their rubbish and stuff lying all over the ground. Council's got to go and clean it up. Somebody's got to pay. So, what do they do? Let's just shut it down.
Yep.
And there's no excuse for it. Like most things in the four-wheel drive world, there's great accessories you can buy to store your rubbish. You see cars driving around with all sorts of contraptions hanging off their spare tyres off the back and things like that to keep their rubbish. And So yeah, there's lots of different options there to so that you don't have to keep the rubbish in the car these days.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's a nice little. I like the little segue into all of that, but yeah, it is. There is no excuse for it, and you know, I think. If we want to keep a lot of this country open, you know, one of the problems we've got is we've got an ageing population, and the more they age, the more they want to get out and go touring. I know I do. If I could retire tomorrow, I'd be gone.
We were talking about it earlier in the car.
We were indeed.
Yeah. So, you know, why wouldn't you? I mean, it's such a beautiful country, and there's so much. I mean, I know between you two, just you two alone, you've seen probably a big, big chunk of this country that most people would never get to see, and there's still so much more that we haven't, you know, and that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to getting out and chuck the camper on the back and just disappear, and I'll be free camping everywhere along the way because, you know, I don't have that sort of money.
Well, we've been lucky to get onto a lot of private property over the years just with our jobs at ARB, so we've seen a lot of country that most people wouldn't see from the highway. But with all these farm stays happening, that certainly opens it up to a lot of other people to see some great stuff.
Yeah. Remote area field assignments, we call them at work. Whenever whenever Mark and I are heading off on a trip somewhere, we just tell reception we're off on a remote area field assignment.
Love it, love it. All right, well, look, we're racing up to the news. Yeah, pretty much 3 o'clock.
Chevron stuck when the Dodge showed up, but the Dodge got stuck in the tractor rut, which eventually pulled out the Ford with some difficulty. A moraine that we'd seen for 1,000 years caused financial joys and biblical fears. It caused some smiles, it caused some tears, but more to the point of our story. For the first time in the collective memory, that old brown prairie that had been so dry for so long was very muddy, boggy, sticky. We'd pull one truck out and get another stuck in, and motors that roar and tires that spin would sink right down to the diff, and we'd all take turns and do it again till no one could move. Call one more friend, come on out here, we need you. Bring your truck. The Chev got stuck in the Ford, got stuck, got the Chev unstuck when the Dodge showed up, but the Dodge got stuck in the tractor rut, which eventually pulled out the Ford and the Dodge. Equal opportunity. Well, got me stuck in the mud so I couldn't rehearse, and Chavez too has missed his work. Richie, you now fears the worst. He stood up his ex-wife, she called him a jerk. Of course Holtman didn't have nothing better to do, yeah, except ranch. Chev got stuck in the Ford, got stuck, got the Chev unstuck when the Dodge showed up, but the Dodge got stuck in the tractor rut, which eventually pulled out the Ford. Well, it was truck after truck, we all got stuck, except the big old 4x Hutterite truck. We all thought, Lord, are we in luck, but he wouldn't come anywhere near us. Mighty neighborly, mighty neighborly. We used a lot of our backs and a little of our brains. It jacked up the jacks, it snugged up the chains. We all did our very best to refrain from shoveling. We put what timber we had underneath the wheels, and we was all out of sand, but managed to steal 2 sacks of the best modern canola seed you ever did see. That ought to give us some traction. The Chev got stuck in the Ford, got stuck, got the Chev unstuck when the Dodge showed up, but the Dodge got stuck in the tractor rut, which eventually pulled out the Ford. Epilogue. We spilled genetically modified canola seed that was genetically modified for control of the weeds and for big old yields of margarine oil, raised hell all over that native prairie soil. Agriculture Canada is definitely going to be looking for us.
We shall play a bit of Lee Kernaghan, Living in Australia, and then we're back to chat with Matt Frost and Mark Lowry, our show sponsors and station sponsors. So good to have them come in and have a chat from our first show back. So let's do it. A bit of Lee Kerning, Living in Australia.
Working our way to paying it off. We get by to live.
Australia. We sit on the veranda when it's too hot inside. We can't use a hose cause it's been too dry. That's nothing new, living in Australia. In Australia. Well, I drive an old relic, she's a bit of a heap. Larry tunes it up, he does it on the cheap. She'll be sweet, living in Australia. When I get a little money, gonna get me a boat, hitch up the trailer and head up the coast. Yeah, I got plans, living in the southern land. It's alright, it's alright, laying back and living the life. It's alright, living in Australia. Sun's going down. We chase the tail lights and head out of town. Just rolling on, living in Australia. It's alright, it's alright, laying back and living the life. It's alright, living in Australia.
This is Ant-Man, and it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. It is 3:14. All right, we're with Matt Frost and Mark Lowry, and we've just been absolutely cracking ourselves laughing about a whole lot of stuff that we can't actually go on air and say. But one of the things we were talking about, which is really funny...
fried chicken.
Yeah, don't mention that. Don't mention the place. We're talking about motorbike riding, and Mark rides and I ride, and I've ridden for a very long time, and you probably have too, Mark.
Oh, I rode a long time ago.
A long time ago, yeah. I should put your mic on, people might hear you. And Matt doesn't ride. And we're trying to explain to him the sense of awareness for when you're riding a motorbike and how good it feels. And, you know, you're out there and you're, everything's heightened, like your awareness is heightened because of road safety, all that sort of stuff. You're just going to be so aware. Until you drive past a certain fried chicken place and the smell gets you every single time. You know, you eat the stuff, you probably get sick or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But it's just every time.
It smells so much better on a bike.
Yeah, it does. It does. And we're trying, and Mark and I are trying to explain that to Matt. The concept seems a bit foreign, doesn't it, Matt?
Not planning on rushing out. Yeah. You're yet to convince me that I need to buy a motorbike, put it that way.
Well, you know, it is all part of touring and it is a bit of fun. You know, and one of the things I like about bike riding as far as touring goes is, again, that sense of freedom. Because if you go out with a bunch of friends and you might just go out for a day ride, and it's nice because you don't have to talk to anyone. You know roughly all where you're going, so you end up in the same place. And, of course, I haven't gone down the path of, you know, headphones between the two helmets so Jane can talk to me. And she can't understand why, because she talks incessantly at times. And so I just refuse to have those the headphones between the two helmets, yeah.
A couple of years ago, I think when I was sort of going through the start of the midlife crisis, I decided that I either needed to get a motorbike,
mm-hmm.
a boat, or a girlfriend half my age.
we're a family show.
Andy Brown is ARB's managing director, and my boss wouldn't let me get a motorbike. He said I'd probably kill myself on it.
Yeah.
My wife didn't really warm to the idea of me getting a girlfriend half my age, so I got the boat, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it, and getting all the sense of freedom I need out of that. Thank you.
Dear. Yeah, well, that's the thing. So when your boat, when you're travelling past a certain chicken place, open your nostrils. Yeah.
Trust me, I do not go anywhere. The reason I got a boat was actually I was spending all these years forward driving along the Murray-Darling and places like that, and loving it, and then just thinking it would be a great way to see the outback, and but from a very different perspective than you get in a car. So I bought and built a boat specifically for sort of touring rivers and running into snags and things like that, and that's where I get my
and that's the reason why I bought a motorbike as well, was to get a different perspective on travelling around.
Yeah,
I've been doing it in four-wheel drive for the last 30-odd years, and rode motorbikes as a kid and thought, no, it's midlife crisis time. It's time to buy a bike.
Yeah, see, it's interesting. You guys have gone through midlife crisis and doing that stuff. I haven't really done that. Not yet. And I mean, I'm sure I'm older than you.
His has been going on for 10 years.
Actually, his has been going ever since I met him.
We were talking about that a lunchtime as well.
Well, I've got to think. You think back, Mark. I met you in 1995, I think it was.
Yeah, it would have been about that.
And it was you and Jody, your ex, and you came along and did a Portman's driver training through the magazine I was working with at the time.
Yeah, it was like a Reader's Weekend.
And I actually had the Portmans over for lunch. They were in the studio last year. They closed out the show, Jeff and Lisa, and they've been going through some big battles with him and his cancer and all that sort of stuff. And so that's when I first met you. And back then, after that, we just kept coming across each other in different readers' things and training. And then you know, got a job with your current people who happen to be, you know, sponsors of the show. And you know, you've been there pretty much ever since.
Yeah, you know? Well, and we've just on 20 years.
Yeah. We just keep crossing paths all the way through. And we've always had fun, like some of our trips down to Tassie and some of the other things, which we have to be very careful about what we say there, but they've been a lot of fun. And so we've enjoyed that. But, you know, whether it's a bike, a boat or whatever, I think the whole point of what we do is to actually just get out and enjoy this beautiful country.
Absolutely.
That's it.
You know, I love riding my bike up around the high country on a lot of the roads around here. And certainly I got my first bike when I was living in Coldstream when I was, well, I don't know, 20-odd, maybe a bit older. No, it wasn't my first. It would have been my first sort of more touring bike. My first bike was a racing bike, an old LC water-cooled thing, 250. I used to ride right up around the Warby Trail, up and down the Spur and the Black Spur, and obviously up around the the Keen Lake Spur, you know, up and down through there. It's just such a beautiful feeling. But you've got to have your wits about you. You've got to have, you know, it's like anything. You're aware. And I think even four-wheel driving, as you would both know, you're cruising along a dirt road and it doesn't take much for something to go wrong and then suddenly you're off the road, or, you know, you still got to have your wits about what you're doing. You've got to be thinking. But, you know, and even in a boat, you would understand, especially river fishing and stuff.
That's why I got a boat made out of 5mm plate aluminium, so that if I hit something, my boat's made out of metal that's thicker than the bull bars that we make. It works.
So it's got to tell you something.
It's designed for.
Is it croc proof?
Well and truly.
Yeah.
Well, you think 5mm plate aluminium?
But yeah. No, I was thinking, deck, is it
so there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
You jump on board, you're gone.
I could probably squeeze in the rod locker if I lost a few kilos.
So it's flat top.
It's a side console boat with a big casting deck out the front.
Fishing
we do, but I mean we just sometimes we just take off in it and just camp and sit at the side of the river. And I've got a young teenage son, and it's just a great way of spending time out with him.
Yeah, yeah. No, you look. You know, we are so lucky we can do that. Like, we really are. I mean, I know you've travelled with your kids a lot, and the same with you, Matt, and the same with us. And it's nothing like, you know, taking kids out and watching them grow.
Yep.
You know? My youngest son's into four-wheel driving big time, modifying cars, like his mechanic, and modifying cars, four drives, all that sort of stuff, you know, and he's just loving it with his mates because they get out and they just go and play, and he's sensible, and, you know, it's all fun. And I think that's next generation coming up.
That's it. Yeah, my two oldest boys have both got four-wheel drives. One isn't driving yet, but he's pulling it apart and learning all about it. And
well, how old are they now?
The oldest is about to turn 21.
Right.
And Jamo is the middle one. He's 15, turning 16.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So catches up to you really quick.
Yeah, it does. Well, see, you know, must be doing something because you've got that grey look thing happening.
Yeah, thanks. And I'm younger than you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the lifestyle, I'm sure.
That's it.
It could be working under Matt. Could that working. Could be the other thing. I mean, you work under Andy and you've got no hair. Oh dear, that's probably going to come back and bite me. I think on that note, we better play. Well, what have we got? I might put a bit of Troy Cassadaly in there because we just had a bit of Lee Cunningham before. And we'll swap that around. We've got a few station sponsors we've got to go through. So, on that note, bit of Troy Cassadaly. It's 3:22 p.m. here on Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show. And we'll be right back.
Step away from the daily grind. Come and get a little sunshine. If you want to feel wild and free, take a walk in my country. Lose a little time on an endless beach. Footprints behind you. Cast your troubles in the deep blue sea. Take a walk in my country. Come away on eagle's wings. Come away where the dreamtime sings. Brothers and sisters, you and me. Spinifex planes, gentle voices will guide you. Get a little red dirt all over your feet and take a walk in my country.
Ronald King Men's Land, Matches Surfwear at Croydon and Lilydale, and also Ronald King's Ladies Fashions at Croydon, are proud sponsors of local radio. For over 50 years, the Ronald King stores have been a part of the Eastern Ranges and Yarra Valley community, where friendly, helpful and expert service has assisted the thousands of loyal customers to look and feel their best. So next time you need to dress up or dress down, call in and see the helpful team at Ronald King's and Matches Surfwear at 122 Main Street Croydon and 233 Main Street Lilydale, where service, style, quality and price is the best.
Outlook Windows and Colonial Woodworks have serviced the Yarra Valley and beyond for the past 22 years, making made-to-measure timber, aluminium windows and doors, single and double glazed, also security, Invisiguard doors and fly screens. They also reproduce old-fashioned windows and doors, as well as furniture from reclaimed timbers. Call Peter on 1800 622 544 for Outlook Windows and Colonial Woodworks. Station sponsor.
Celebrate Australia Day long weekend at Healesville Greyhounds. It's all happening on Monday 28th of January with live music, entertainment, local food trucks and loads of games and fun for the kids. Plus there's all the excitement of great Greyhound action. Enjoy one last day out before the end of school holidays. It's going to be a fun family day out and entry is free. Gates open from 10 a.m. 263 Don Road, Healesville, Monday the 28th of January. For more information go to healesville.grv.org.au. Healesville Greyhounds, station sponsor.
Celebrate the life, loves and poetry of Robbie Burns at Oscars on the Yarra in Warburton. Dust off your kilt and practice your poetry. Friday, January 25th from 6:30 p.m. Four courses of Scottish fare, $70, including a whiskey or wine. Live entertainment. Burns-inspired poetry or music is encouraged. Traditional attire appreciated. Accommodation packages are available. Tickets essential by the 21st of January. Call Leslie or Robin on 5966 9166. OscarsOnTheYarra.com.au, station sponsor.
All right, it's 3:20 time. It's 3:29. Nearly time for the news. Matt, we were talking before, you were talking about a thing that Ken Duncan's doing, you know, famous photographer.
Yeah, that was a trip I did late last year. So Ken is a long-term customer of ours. I mean, just by the very nature of his work, going into remote parts of Australia to photograph landscapes and people and wildlife. He needs a four-wheel drive and needs a very well set up four-wheel drive for sort of heading off into remote areas for extended periods. And one of the things he's done over that time is spent a lot of time in remote Aboriginal communities. And I think, you know, without delving into the complexities that Aboriginal people face, I think it's widely known that there's a lot of challenges with these remote communities, and Ken really sort of felt compelled to do something and try and make a difference. So he set up a charity called Walk a While, and Walk a While's their mission is basically to provide the tools and education to help Aboriginal kids take up the art, so whether that's photography or graphic design or even music. And so, look, cut a long story short, Ken actually asked me to come up and have a look at the work he was doing, and so I went up to Alice Springs and drove about 3 or 4 hours west to a little spot called Haast Bluff, and there's actually Ken's actually set up a basically like a school of the arts there, where they put computers and musical equipment, and they're teaching the kids how to take photos, how to do graphic design, record music, and it's a great little project. I mean, you hear lots of bad things about these remote communities, and this is a great example of the community wanting to do this themselves. I mean, they're the ones that are driving this, and Ken with his expertise in the arts and his contacts is helped facilitate it. So it's a great project, and I mean, this is a pretty small community. There's probably a couple hundred people living there, and the work he's doing is having a really, really positive effect up there. So it was a great thing to see. Beautiful part of the world. Haast Bluff is quite off the beaten track. I mean, that whole western part of the McDonald Ranges is some of the most spectacular scenery in the country, and this particular area is one of those spots that you generally don't go to because it is really off the beaten track, but it's a beautiful part of the world, and this particular community has a number of projects that they're they're working on, which ultimately are aimed at getting people in four-wheel drives out there. They're keen to get people out there in moderate numbers. Yeah. To see this country for themselves, and I mean through that they're hoping to get jobs and a future for the for the Aboriginal people out there.
Yeah, I think it's a great cause, and certainly one. I mean that area out there is just so stunning. It is just beautiful, and if you know sunsets on red rock in desert country, and you know that remoteness still, and it's still quite remote. It's really really pretty. But those sort of I guess community based programs are really good, and Ken's got an amazing skill. And he's done some phenomenal work over the years.
One of the other projects, which is quite separate to this Walkerwhile School of the Arts, is I came across, and I never knew any of this, but they're actually, most of the communities out there, they're quite strong Christian communities. I mean, back in, I suppose, what, the 1800s, the Lutherans came out from Germany and established missions out there. And I think you've been to a few of those, haven't you, Mark?
Yeah.
And, One of the projects that the community is working on is on one of the peaks out there. They're actually planning to build a 20-meter cross, and the idea is that they want to build this cross on top of this mountain, and then that in itself will bring tourism to the area. And I mean, actually doing that obviously is no mean feat. I mean, trying to get a 20-meter steel structure on top of a mountain without wrecking the mountain and driving bulldozers up is quite a challenge. Mm. So they're actually building a very, very environmentally friendly four-wheel drive track to the top of this mountain. And when I say environmentally friendly, rather than actually bulldoze the track in places, they've actually built a steel structure off the side of the mountain to accommodate a very small four-wheel drive. I don't think we're allowed to mention brands on the show, but if you can imagine a four-wheel drive under 2 tonne that's very, very capable with low range, there's one particular four-wheel drive that fits the bill beautifully, and, mm-hmm. and their aim is that once this track is finished, and it's almost finished now, they'll be able to drive vehicles to the top of the mountain and build this structure, and then their expectation is that, as I say, people will come out from Alice Springs, have a look at it, and you know, spend a little bit of time and money in the community, and it's just a great there's a lot of great things happening up there that a number of people are driving. And, it was a really, really good thing to
cool.
see.
Well, we might have to, we've got to go to the 3:30 local news. I know it's a bit late, we're 3:34, but we might come back and we'll continue on with that theme because I'm really interested in that. Okay, it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here. It is 3:34, and we were talking about community projects and the Lutherans and the Cross and everything out in Alice Springs, Alice Springs. Obviously, as a company, you guys seem to be getting involved in a lot of this sort of charity type work.
We do. We made the decision a long time ago. It's about 15 years ago that we would stop buying gifts for customers. I mean, I think most people in business will know that in years gone by, it was pretty customary at Christmas you'd buy people hampers and. And because we've got, and I'm talking about our wholesale customers here, because we've got so many customers, we're talking of a lot of money, tens of mm-hmm. thousands of dollars. And we made a decision, Andy Brown and I, 15 years ago, that we were going to stop doing that. We weren't going to buy gifts for our customers anymore. And instead, every year, we would take those funds and put them into charity. And we've never made a big deal about it, but we've always tried to work with charities that we've got some sort of close affiliation to. And you know, in terms of Ken's charity, trying to he has done put the School of the Arts up there. You know, with Ken being a four-wheel driver, a customer, it was a great project for us, a real grassroots project that we felt we could help with. We could, you know, provide some financial backing into something, and then actually see the difference it makes. So we've done a lot of projects that we've been involved in, whether they're community projects or I mean, one of the recent ones we did was a cancer charity. We did some work with, because one of our customers that I know quite well lost his wife sadly to breast cancer. So we supported some charities that helped them through their journey. So there's quite a lot of those sort of things we like to do in the background. Yes.
Yeah, which I think is, look, it shows a whole lot of things, and this is not trying to put I guess, wind in behind it, but it really does show that there is a focus there from you guys, not just to build four-wheel drive gear and you know, a range of it and blah, blah, blah. It's not just to educate four-wheel drivers in the right way to do things and all the rest of it, because I know, you know, Mark, you've been involved in so many videos on how-tos and all the rest of it for years. So it's not just that. It really is that there's a bigger picture in there, and giving back to the community is quite special, I think, you know, in the way that works.
One of the quirkiest ones I think we came across, and this was about 10 years ago now, it was we sell a lot of products all over the world. I mean, the USA is our second biggest market after Australia, and one of our customers in North America was doing some travel in Mexico and was horrified to see disabled kids crawling around in the dirt, basically because they couldn't afford to buy wheelchairs. I mean, wheelchairs are quite an expensive thing to buy in any part of the world. And this guy said, right, I'm going to build low-budget off-road wheelchairs for these kids so they don't have to crawl around in the dirt. They can have wheelchairs. And he basically made wheelchairs out of... and I'm talking by the thousands. I mean, he was sending them down in containers, and they were made out of mountain bike tyres, and you know, with those little plastic deck chairs. And that was another one that we sort of got behind and covered the freight cost of a couple of containers. So there's all sorts of things that come across our desk. But if there's some sort of correlation to what we do and our customers, and they're the ones that we really like to try and get behind and support.
Yeah, which again, I think you're supporting our station and obviously the show, and that's a great thing, because, you know, we're all volunteers, we survive on what we're doing, and, you know, that sort of thing comes back to it, and then we also get to have a chat about stuff, so, you know, it's a win-win, really, isn't it? Yeah, so we are sort of pushing towards the end of the hour. So what's on the horizon, I guess I'll ask you, Mark, first, travel-wise, what have you got plans for this year, anything major?
I haven't sort of sat down and made many plans for this year.
Is work going to send you all around the country?
Probably will at some stage. So I'm working on a bit of training for some of our staff at the moment, so that'll probably get me into a few stores around the country.
Yep.
But four-wheel drive destinations, we were talking about going back up to Tolano again this year. So we'll wait and see what the water situation's like. But we were going to spend a week or two there just on the station, take our motorbikes, do a bit of four-wheel drive, a bit of bike riding, a few other activities while we're there. So very accommodating people. So it's just a great place to stay.
Yeah, which is good.
Other than that, take it as it comes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a bit where I'm heading. What about you, Matt? Have you got a bit happening?
One of our sort of media partners is putting together a trip at the moment that sort of appeals to me. I'm sort of quite fortunate these days. I get to pick and choose the trips I come on. But they're putting one together which will take in the Big Desert, the border track, and then down through the Coorong in South Australia, which really appeals to me. I've done a bit of the border track and a bit of the Big Desert. I haven't been to the Coorong,
That one
I reckon will be my next sort of four-wheel drive trip.
Just got to watch out for the feral bees on the border track.
The feral bees?
Feral bees.
Well, my wife's actually a beekeeper, so I'll get some advice from her.
Is she really?
She is a beekeeper, yes.
Okay, guess what? Truly. I've been wanting to get bees and keep bees on our place for a while, so maybe we might be having a personal chat a bit after, because, yeah, I want, you know, on our we've got 5 acres, and a lot of it's tea tree, and the tea tree flowers, and it's called Kunzea, actually, not tea tree, technically, but it flowers for quite a significant part of the year, and we just think it would make really nice honey. So I've been looking at how to get myself set up. I was allergic to bees as a kid, so the doctor reckons that now I'm probably okay with getting a bee sting.
Probably.
Because it's been a while. But I used to swell up, so yeah, but I went and got all the tests done. So, and I think beekeeping, like keeping frogs, naturally keeping ponds, all that sort of stuff is so important for our environment. And we get these cute little bees. I thought they were an Australian bush bee because they're quite small, but apparently they're not, because it's too cold down in Melbourne for them to survive.
Okay, because we get very small bees at home as well, where they're very black in colour.
They can go black to sort of brown, not the sort of brighter yellow that you would quite often see. So what sort of bees do you keep? Or does she keep?
They're a European variety, and I believe the reason she went that way is because of the honey production. I think the European variety of bees produce more honey than the native bees, I believe. If there's any beekeepers here, feel free to ring in and correct me. I believe that's the reason why. But no, she got into them a couple of years ago. I think the first time she tried to harvest some honey, she got stung about 50 times. But these days, she's got it down pat. So there's obviously a few little tips and techniques worth learning there. She loves it, and I mean, she gets about 20 litres of honey a year out of the hive, and which makes her very popular in our street. So it's something she's got into and really enjoys.
Yeah, well, I think that's the enjoyment factor that I'd like to be able to get out, because we're into trying to set ourselves up as sustainably as we can. So, you know, we've water tanks, we've got vegetables, we've got fruit trees, we've got our native bush all around us as well. So you sort of drive through this massive plantation of Kunzea, and, you know, it's called Firebush or Kero Bush, and, you know, you come out and there's, you know, it's more manicured and all the rest of it. But, you know, even our pond that we've got, I want to turn that into a fish breeding sort of scenario where I can just walk out and drop a line in, catch a fish.
Your swimming pool would be fantastic for that.
My pool would, except I actually like swimming in that every now and again. I don't feel like getting eaten by the fish. Yeah, it's salt. It's chlorine. It's not what I want. But, I've got this massive pond, which looks like an outdoor pool. It's got glass windows in the base of it so that you can actually see into the water and all that sort of stuff. So it's just a big job to clean it out, and it'll get there. It's one job at a time, one job at a time. So, feral bees, we're talking about many years ago when we did the border track, Jane and I, and we camped near one of the bluffs that you can walk up to, and there's a sign for feral bees. And seriously, when we had a bit of a late night and a bit of fun, and we'd left a few bottles and things out, and the next morning there were bees everywhere. And I just looked at her and said, I'm allergic. I can't go out there, because I travel with an EpiPen and all that for many years until I got tested. So when I said I'm allergic, I was serious. I've always had an EpiPen when I've travelled, and sometimes two, depending on where we were going. But, these bees were everywhere, and Jane had to get out of the car and shuffle them out of the bottles and off a few things, and I just sat there and went, I'm not getting out. You know, big, tough bushman I am. But, the border track's gorgeous, and the Coorong is stunning, stunning. We've actually had the privilege of driving along border track and then out around the Coorong to the town, and then back around and up to, I can't think of the crossing, 10-mile crossing, I think it is, and then we drove all the way down the coast on the ocean side.
I think that's the trip that they planned, because they mentioned there's 100K of beach driving.
Yeah, so we were lucky enough. We went down there with people from beach or coast care. And so there was them, and then there was the ranger. And so we went down when they were having their kig tides. It was around Easter time, I think, from memory. And we had a petrol leak in the car we were in. And so by the time we got to the end, and the ranger said to us, look, the other guys are stuck. You've got to keep going to the end. So you go. And we got there, and we'd lost, you know, 2/3 of our tank in fuel because it was leaking and evaporating because it was coming out and hitting the exhaust. So we're lucky it didn't actually go up in flames. And we had to get Jane's family, one of her family members, to take his boat out, grab a couple of jerry cans of fuel. We put him in the car, topped it up, and then he took us for a boat ride along the Coorong.
Sensational.
And you've got emus running across the sand dunes. So, you know, it's this beautiful waterway between the mainland and the sort of the main sand dune that protects it from the ocean. And, there's kangaroos get out there, and there's emus get out there, and you can go fishing there, and it's just absolutely stunning. And you've got Lake Alexandrina in the middle there between the town and the ocean front, where they filmed Stormboy originally. So and I believe a new version of that's just coming out now too, just for something different.
Sounds great. I'll look forward to that one. I think you've just convinced me.
Look, it's beautiful. It really is. They have king tides there, and they've got their birds, and you know a lot of ocean fishing, and tide pressure is obviously really critical, which, you know, you and I and Mark are all big fans of doing the right thing with tide pressures. You get out on the coast, and it's really can be soft, choppy up depending on the tides, or it can be just this nice firm like a little highway, and the fisher folk go out there and do their ocean fishing from there. And so, you know, if you're into fishing, you need ocean gear, you need river gear and a boat and all that sort of stuff. But it's just such a beautiful place to go. We went up there when we picked up Jet, our Roddy, We took the camper and we went out to Coorong on the way around, so we did the coastline and before we went and picked her up, and it's just so nice. Just so nice. You'll love it.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, no, that's it. So that's good. So there's plenty of travel happening. Can you give me a hint about any potential new things that might be happening without mentioning too much in the way of smart product or...
There's always... One of our biggest strengths is the size of our engineering team. I think we've got nearly 60 engineers spread across design and production. Now, a lot of those are developing existing accessories for new vehicles. I mean, that ultimately is what ties up most of our time. A new vehicle comes up, we've got to go and redesign all the accessories to suit, but there are a couple of key new things that we've got planned, particularly suited to the broader touring market that we'll see come out this year. Rest assured we're always looking at what we can do better, looking at other items in the marketplace and what we can do to improve on them. Watch this space.
Watch the space. Yeah, well, it's a good space to be in. There's always something going on, really, when it, like you say, when it's just the new models that are coming out, and what has to be produced for them. There's plenty out there. There's plenty to choose from.
There is indeed, absolutely.
Mm. Yeah, so, and by the way, Mark, you might not have noticed, but the song I played before the news earlier was all about getting stuck and using different vehicles to pull out different vehicles on the property.
Oh, yeah.
That was aimed at you.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah. So this is, can I mention your nickname on?
Oh, on there? Sure.
Yeah, so Mark's nickname is Lowmount, which he got from a Tassie trip where we had a lot of recovery work happening, amongst other things, and so the name sort of stuck, really, didn't it?
It has, yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Well, that's because...
Matt calls me Lowman all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, it's... you see all the videos that I've seen of you over the years, you know, whether you've been trunching through snow, climbing hills, you always seem to have gloves and a winch.
Yep, that's
and
it.
And obviously low mount is a style of winch.
Yep.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's probably, I'm normally controlling the winches because a lot of people don't use them on a regular basis and they can be very dangerous things. So I like to get out there and show how it's done.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. All right, so we've got one more song we're going to play. I chose this one as much as anything else is because this is my daughter's getting married in Vegas in a couple of years, and we're planning on doing Route 66. And one of the guys that actually sang this song is just passed away today. So we'll go into that. We've got a CSA about bushfires and LPG, and then we'll be back to close out the show. All right, it's 3:50 p.m. here on Yarra Valley FM, and it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show.
fires can threaten life and property, but the Humble LPG cylinder is designed to survive a fire if it is correctly installed and prepared. The LPG Association of Australia has these tips. You should turn the cylinder off at the valve on top of the bottle. You should leave the cylinder where it has been installed and leave the bottle or cylinder in an upright position. You should ensure it is secure to a solid structure and on a solid base to prevent it falling over with the vent facing away from buildings. Any LPG bottles attached to a wooden frame barbecue should be placed on a solid base, and you should remove any combustible material surrounding the bottle. The LPG Association of Australia also says you should never place it inside a house or structure during a fire, as it can present a hazard to firefighters. You should never lay any cylinders on their side, and you should never cover a gas cylinder with wet material to keep it cool, because these materials may dry out and catch a light, heating the bottle or cylinder. This information has been brought to you by the Australian LPG Association and Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
Okay, and it's 3:53. It's Ant-Man and Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here on Yarra Valley FM, the voice of the Yarra Valley. We've got Matt Frost and Mark Lowry on board, and we've been chatting about all things. We're just having a bit of a chat about travelling over to the US, because my daughter's getting married over there, and I'm going to, my son and I want to hire a car and do Route 66, and it has to be a muscle car, you know. We don't want a new one, we'd prefer an older one. So that'll be a bit of fun. So, yeah, and you said you love being in America, Matt?
Yeah, I had two children and all the luggage to go with it, so I couldn't hire a muscle car. We were in a big SUV, I think, as they call them over there. But yeah. It is a great place to travel. Unfortunately, a lot of people draw opinions on the US on watching news over here, and and the reality is it's nothing like that. If you want to go and do a road trip somewhere, it's just an awesome place to travel.
Oh, it is. Well, have you been over?
No.
Oh, you haven't done it?
No, one day.
You might have to get a certain company to send you over there. They sell enough product there. Go over and do some training. It's brilliant. And what I found, once you get away from the sort of the major cities, because there's so much happening, Bryce Canyon, Zion Canyon, Grand Canyon, all of these places were just stunning. San Diego was stunning. I mean, but the people were actually really friendly. And they all address you as sir, ma'am, all that sort of stuff. I don't know, your experience the same?
Yeah, totally, and even down to road manners. I mean, the road manners over there are far, far better than over here. There's a lot more cars on the road, and you would think going over there and driving would be a busy, stressful experience. And you know, you hear these road rage stories on the news over here, and it's nothing like that. I mean, the drivers are courteous, polite. It's just a very easy, pleasant place to travel. I found.
Yeah.
How's the coffee?
Terrible. I spent 3 weeks without having a decent coffee.
That's the hard part. Is they have all these big brand names that they've fostered out to the rest of the world. The rest of the world makes fantastic coffee and they don't.
We heard about when we were in Portland, we heard of an Australian guy that owned a cafe there on the other side of town. So my wife got up early one morning and we walked about 3 or 4K to this coffee shop and expecting to get a great coffee, and it was pretty ordinary.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the problem, isn't it? You know,
we're spoilt here in Melbourne.
Oh, we are. I mean, come on, foodie capital of the world, really. And you can really tell the difference between a good coffee and a bad coffee here, and one that's made the right way. I have to admit, some of our local people probably need to take a bit of lessons in how to make a coffee. I got one recently. We were doing a job where I was doing a photo shoot around the Christmas Hills with a caravan, just a little van, little car, and we had a cup of coffee and we were hanging out for one, and I thought, yep, beautiful. We got in the car, I took one sip and I burnt my mouth. I put it down. I came back to it an hour later. It was still too hot to drink.
Exactly that this morning.
It's just so frustrating.
And also spilled half of it all over me. So
yeah. Well, you know when they have those warnings on cups, you know, you've just bought hot coffee, and there's a warning that says this coffee may be hot. Well, this one should be. This it will be scalding. Yeah. It's so full on. But no, I think we are blessed here in Australia. And as much as I'm looking forward to getting over there and doing, you know, because I've only been there once before. Well, actually, I've been twice. But yeah, you know, I always like telling people, they go, "You've been to America?" Yeah, I flew to America to have dinner in the White House, and I was back in 3 days. And I did. So
dinner in the White House.
I had dinner in the White House, yes. I got to stand where the president stands when he does his address to the nation and all that sort of stuff. The White House, you know, for all the movies you see and everything else, the White House is an amazing, amazing place. The history in that building, like if it ever blew up the way you see it in the movies. Yeah. If you ever see it blow up, the one thing the Americans do well is they store history well, and through all their museums and all that sort of stuff that are everywhere. But in the White House, you walk through, and apart from all the security falava you have to go through, the history, the paintings that date back to the early 1800s, you know, from the war back then and all the rest of it. I mean, oh my gosh, it's just amazing, the sort of stuff that's there. And so, we flew in, flew across to DC, got out, night, next day, a bit of travel into the White House for dinner that night, and then the next day a bit of travel and then flew home.
Well, a lightning trip.
It was. And it was all part of a car launch that we were involved in, or a pre-launch. But, it's still amazing. I mean, you know, whether you hate it or you don't, you know, our buildings over here were only 200 years old. You go over there and those buildings are a hell of a lot older.
Unfortunately, a lot of ours weren't built to last.
That's true, yeah. But that was a sign of the times too, because you got to think, you know, in our history, famine, poverty, war, and what it stripped us of, you know, both world wars, and how much impact that had on our money and the materials to use and all that sort of stuff, it really did make a difference. So, yes, definitely made for it. Okay, so on that note, we're going to head off to Richard Clapton down in the lucky country, because I figure that's right. We're going to hit the 4 o'clock news. So to Matt, to you, Mark, thank you very much for coming in and sharing a couple of hours with us. It's been a great chat.
Thanks for having us, mate.
Great way to spend a Thursday afternoon. Thank you.
It is brilliant.
ARB 4x4 Accessories is a proud sponsor of Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show and a station sponsor. Whether it be frontal protection, a drawer system to increase storage, or a recovery kit to ensure you don't get stuck in the bush without a way out, head to ARB today to ensure you're ready for whatever our harsh Aussie terrain will throw your way. Visit arb.com.au to explore the products that are right for you, or find your closest ARB store or stockist.